Good morning and welcome to today's Cleantech Podcast. I'm your host, Dawn Van Zandt, founder of InvestorIdeas.com, and this is my way of helping you stay informed with cleantech stock news and interviews with thought leaders. Learn about today's problems and solutions for the future. Let's all do our part to make this beautiful planet a better place each and every day. Good morning and welcome to today's Cleantech Podcast. I'm talking to Jason Birmingham, CEO and President of Abound Energy Inc., trading on the CSE, ABND, and on the OTC, ZAIRF, about the journey to date and the potential future markets for his patented Xeris long-duration energy storage technology. As I learned more about their technology, I could see how it potentially could play a key role in the future of power grid stability. Well, thanks for joining us today, Jason, and giving our listeners an opportunity to get to know you and your company. So can we just start out with your background in environmental technologies leading up to today at Abound Energy?
Well, I've always considered myself certainly somebody who cares for the environment, somebody who is recognizing the need for an evolution of technology that will help us transition away from solely reliant fossil fuels. I've done a lot of learning about the long-duration energy storage market, which is where Abound fits in the last few years. I started off as an investor in the company and have migrated into the interim CEO role. Again, coming back to why I feel this industry is compelling for investors to look at is it truly brings on side all the green and solar facilities that are out there and makes them less susceptible to financial turmoil, because a lot of that energy that's being produced specifically for wind is being done at nighttime, and the solar obviously at day, and those aren't the peak times when energy is needed. So the long duration energy storage market is seriously an important component to allowing the energy that's normally just unfortunately thrown off and dispensed, which is about 30%, we are able to capture it. So that's where I've come from in my understanding of the opportunity to be a part of the green energy space. And I'm quite excited to walk you through the tech and how far this company's come and how long it does take to generate a technology that is transformative and disruptive like this one.
Well, I think it's great to hear you started out as an investor. For other investors, that's a good beginning for them to hear that you've put your money into this deal and you bet on it as well. So can you talk about really looking at it from 2024? There's been a lot of changes. You've done a name change and rebranding. Can you start with that and from going from Zinc 8 to Abound, what the company looks like right now? If you were describing the company to somebody today, how would you describe that, and what are you excited about?
Sure. I think you probably have a great deal of people who follow both sectors, meaning the clean tech sector and probably your mining exploration sectors. All of those sectors have a similarity in that from time to time, great ideas are birthed, they're supported, and then cycles occur, and people either move away from their interest in financing one cycle to jump to another hot cycle. And what often happens is these technologies can become orphaned until somebody picks it up and dusts it off and carries forward with the baton. And that's kind of where I see our team stepping in. This company was called Zinc 8 Energy. It has been around for in excess of 10 years under that foundational, if you will, IP development process. And it had gone public in 2019 as Zinc 8, and it spent 4 years and 4 years plus raising significant capital and drumming up, I think, a very good following for where they were taking this technology. But like all technology or early stage projects, they're capital intensive. And you have to hit milestones as swiftly as you can, and ideally, keep the attention of the investors. Where we come in is, unfortunately, last September, the company hit a bit of an abrupt wall. It had just recently, before then, filed a $60 million shelf prospectus with Raymond James. It had come off significant raises the prior years, but it had eaten through a great deal of capital, and I would have to say that COVID probably played a bit part in not allowing the technology and the teams to work effectively and efficiently to carry the technology to where it could be, which I think is, you know, it's within striking distance of proving out a scalable pilot plant, which is what everybody is now betting on us to be able to do. And we feel we're about $6 million capital and about 12 to sort of 16 months away from doing. Again, coming back to your question specifically, though, why did we rebrand? Zinc 8 had a fairly good following. It had a lot of investors on both sides of the border, Canada, the U.S. However, when we went out to introduce the company to our different investors, a lot of them initially thought we were a mining company. The zinc just grabs their attention, and for some reason it takes a little while for them to understand that that's simply an homage to the underlying particle we use in our flow battery. It's relevant to the story, and hence the name of the actual unit that we anticipate to complete and sell is called Zeris, which is, like I say, tied to the original Zinc 8 name. However, Abound, we feel, provided us a lot more latitude coming into this company because we knew it wasn't going to be an easy job to pick up the IP where it was left, which is in a very good spot, by the way, but to rebuild the confidence of the investor base. So we wanted to put our own moniker on it, and we also wanted to free ourselves from the focus of the advancement solely of this IP, because there is a great deal of IP that the company's developed over the last number of years that actually all has the potential to be somewhat advanced with other strategic partners. So there's at least 16 patents that we've got issued, at least 5 patents pending, and then we've had at least 3 significant awards from industry participants. That includes our largest utility in the United States, called the New York Power Authority, who recognized this technology and IP a number of years ago, and really out of 100 different long-duration battery technologies that were presented, selected this company's technology as the one to back. So we do have a pilot program that we anticipate to fulfill, which is designated to be on the site of the University of Buffalo, and that would be a plant that would support the underlying university campus air conditioning backup. And we've got a few other opportunities just like that.
Can you go into a little more detail on Zeris? And as you said, it's long-duration energy storage technology. When I was looking at the website, a lot of the things you focused on were that zinc is safer, a lot of benefits of this technology. Can you give investors an idea of how long that duration is? That's one of the things I really wanted to walk away with, is what do you really offer when power goes out, whether it's renewable or electrical? What kind of backup storage capacity do you offer?
Sure. Well, I'm going to give you 3 statements just to lead into that answer. First of all, what is it that we do? We are a provider of what we think is a very cost-effective storage and sustainable component to the green energy industry, like solar and wind, to augment that power into the grid. Our goal is to ensure that, you know, we're not losing much desired green energy, and we're able to support their efforts in enhancing that as a solution for the future by allowing it to be cost effectively stored. How we do it is we utilize our Zeris technology, which is, again, you had it right, zinc air-based technology. And why we do it, of course, is to meet the ever-growing needs. And just to talk about that, you know, the total addressable market for this long-duration storage market is in excess of the billions of dollars. I mean, I can certainly send you to our website, and you maybe have already found the quotes, but it's a significant market, and it's constantly changing because people are unable with current incumbent technologies to satisfy the needs, both from a safety perspective, quite frankly, a fiscal perspective. So coming back to how is it that we do it and the timeline, again, we're a zinc air battery. It's a very unique structure. We do not have a membrane between the two different stacks like the common, say, vanadium redox battery. There's a lot of digging that people can understand about why lithium is probably the first phase of a solution for long duration and how that's kind of waning. That relates to, you know, again, the cost to store, the limitations for the time to store, which is, you know, pretty much under 4 hours, and some of the fire hazards that come along with it and safety issues. Vanadium redox has certainly stepped into that incumbent location for the industry, and that's a technology that was developed over 40 years, mostly out of Australia. And yet that also has specific limitations. Why we're excited about Abound's Zerus technology and why we think we're getting the attention from some of these very large utilities is we can effectively store energy in excess of 8 hours, up to 24 hours. The longer, in fact, we go, the more cost competitive even we are. And, you know, certainly there's going to be a lot of other people who are, you know, trying to leverage zinc as an opportunity to store long-duration energy, but we do it definitely in a unique manner. Our electrolyte is shared between both stacks, the regeneration stack and the discharge stack. So we're not having a membrane in between those different cycles. It's actually we're sharing that same electrolyte, and hence we can store in a large tank, which is totally scalable to the customer's needs, and on either side being the stacks and the regenerators, to meet the design qualifications of each project. So there's a whole lot in there that I've just shared. I think it's important to just talk about where the market's going to go, though, and why this is so important, not just the least of which is solar and wind energy generation and trying to bring them on side to make them financially viable without subsidies. But we believe the backup power, the demand response, the peak management and demand resolution is all very important components to that marketplace. And one particular area that we're really excited about is going to be the future energy arbitrage that we feel we can bring a very economical solution to. So I'm not sure, you know, if you are aware, but right now, you know, Canada, for example, has a big, you know, BC Hydro or Hydro One, sorry, in Toronto. And every night they send a lot of energy south of the border because they have to dispense it somewhere. And you can't just, you know, freely release that energy somewhere. It's got to track to somewhere. So we would love the opportunity in the future to be able to park one of our large systems right beside where they would normally wire that electricity south of the border or sometimes even pay for it to go there and capture it and hold it for 8 hours, 12 hours, whatever it may be, and then take advantage of the arbitrage from, say, 2 cents and selling it back to the grid at 8 and 12 cents. So there's many different opportunities to service this entire green energy space, but it's even bigger than that. It's really the effective use of the entire grid at this point that we see a much, much opportunity.
So in terms of the current progress of the company, you recently announced the Azule Energy Services contract. From what I understand, that's your first revenue. Can you talk about that and the significance of that?
Yeah, I mean, that's hence the elements to changing the name Abound Energy. It opened us up to be a little bit more than simply focused on our own technology, which, again, we have to plan and finance around. And as I mentioned, it's going to be about $6 million, we feel, that'll get us to that point, and because that requires us to bring back a lot of the engineers and staff that, unfortunately, were laid off before I got involved. And, you know, hopefully some of them will come back. And unfortunately, you know, this market in Vancouver is very expensive. So some, you know, may have moved on. But we feel very confident that we can get back to that. Having talked about Azule just now, I would love to share the way that whole opportunity arose. Azule is a Japanese VC-backed catalyst manufacturer. They are doing R&D from a very unique sea creature called the sea pineapple. It's become quite an eyesore after they, you know, fish out the important edible parts. They toss the husks into a big area, and it's becoming quite an eyesore and quite a resource if you can figure out what to do with it. So a number of ex-Fujifilm employees who were entrepreneurial in spirit elected to try to ascertain what could be done with these husks, what could they be used for. And they've gone through, you know, a multitude of years of R&D to develop a catalyst that they wanted to now utilize and experiment on a cathode. This is a non-metallic, meaning not platinum or palladium, catalyst. And they elected to seek out our company and cathode to utilize. After visiting our offices in December of 2023, The lead in management team actually opted to take part of our very fast rescue financing, which was about $535,000. They all participated after seeing our facilities, after understanding where we're headed, and wanted to have a bit of exposure. That was quite nice of them. And then they promptly circulated a prospective MOU that we evaluated amongst our board members and gave thumbs up to. We could see that, you know, they actually had a real passion for the same industry that we are. And that resulted in leading to a final agreement where they wanted to leverage our facilities, which, you know, quite frankly, I haven't even spoken of. We've got two large facilities, a 10,000-square-foot facility that houses our cathode manufacturing division, even though it's a little bit premature. It was invested in heavily before we got involved. And, of course, we've got the other location, which is about 15,000 square feet with all of our various different racks of pilot plant long-duration energy storage components that are waiting to be now assembled into a pilot. So coming back to Azul, though, once we signed this agreement, we've now started testing. In fact, they're in our offices this last 2 weeks, getting a bit of an update. Early indications from them is that they've had remarkable test results, and they'll be looking forward to additional R&D with us. And that revenue stream is not a great deal of revenue, to be honest, but it is revenue, and it helps us, you know, with our turnaround objectives of the company. One of the things we wanted to showcase to the investor base is that, you know, this management team would turn over no stone to help reduce, you know, future dilution. So if we can do that by creating some cash flow from a services agreement with tech and equipment that we already have an investment in, and possibly even better our overall capacity in terms of our end unit, the Xeris unit, then we're going to do that.
One of the questions I wanted to ask you personally is, being in this business, and looking at the narrative that we hear from government and media on climate change versus companies like yours firsthand trying to find solutions for what's the real world versus just the narrative. What are your thoughts on that in terms of support? Like, are you getting support from the government either in Canada and the US? And do you feel there's a difference story from the companies actually doing things versus what the media is selling to people?
Well, I think the amount of support that the government has given to this industry has largely been through giant long-term relationships, in some cases with a lot of companies that aren't actually from Canada in this case. I mean, in locally in BC here, we had the federal government and provincial government just step up and provide a great deal of financing support for a new smaller scale type battery solution that would kind of compete with and be serviced by, you know, lithium batteries for, you know, automobiles and what have you. I think that, you know, the broader context is that, you know, the green space for the last 15 years has been heavily prescribed as the panacea for us all, but there hasn't been a great deal of understanding of what that means or how we're going to get there, and what the rationale is. It can't be all heavily subsidized to get companies to pivot. Subsidies, I don't think, always reward the right, you know, mindset to get a company to the finish line. I know that kind of sounds very odd, because I'm sure we'd be open-handed to some subsidies for sure. But what I'm trying to say is that business case has to be really thought about. It has to be evaluated. I mean, we see our product going into various different markets, not simply being a part of the green energy sector. We think, you know, grid stability, support for small communities where they can actually now be more self-reliant if there's, say, a major incident with weather or emergency of some form. We really see that as kind of making it bulletproof. We would love to see the opportunity to embolden communities to step into, you know, the fray, not wait for just the larger governments to dictate the path. And, of course, to challenge what that path is, you know, because I think vigorous discourse is required when you look at the amount of money that's come into this green energy space and, unfortunately, how much of it is dissipated without a great deal of results. But anyway, the philosophy for us at Abound, which I think is what I should speak to, is that we truly believe that, that there's a market for our tech. The opportunity to develop, you know, alternative green energy is definitely critical through the financial lens. It cannot be just something that taxpayers subsidize. And to that degree, I think BlackRock, which is one of the largest proponents of green energy over the last 15 years, has now started to pivot away from that. So, you know, when the biggest of the big start talking about, you know, moving away ESG type mantra, I think, you know, it does open up an opportunity to have a bit more discourse on what makes sense and what cost. I mean, the moment we start seeing, you know, food inflation and all these other things, I'm getting a little bit off track here, of course. And the moment we start seeing, you know, that trickle into everybody's lives in an impactful way where people now have to choose between shelter and food, I think we've overstepped, you know, common sense. So I would really like to see just, again, an ability to have open discourse with people from all walks of this industry to really allow each other to, you know, get the most out of debate.
That's great. And I think you're bang on when you look at the electric vehicle movement. I think we've seen such a slowdown in that because it is a cost factor for the average person now, and it doesn't matter how much the government or media is trying to sell it when people can't put food on their table. They're not going to switch over. I mean, we make most of our decisions based on our wallet. Our conscience is part of it, but we all have to live. One of the things in talking to you that really sticks out, you know, and I agree wholeheartedly, is grid stability to me is one of the future biggest issues I think we have to confront and deal with. And I don't think it's really talked about enough. And again, going back to pushing the electric vehicle mandate, we cannot fulfill that in any way or form based on the numbers that they're putting forward and what we've seen already with grid failures. So can you just reiterate again, like, how can you fill that gap for grid stability? And am I correct? You said 8 to 24 hours. Will you be able to move past that? And how big can you become as a company? How big can you scale up? Because I think this is going to be one of the biggest issues we face moving forward. That's just my own opinion.
Yeah, and I would say that our scalability of hours can get into the hundreds. I believe, and that's what our technology team believes. We feel very strongly that given the stability of what's called our Zinc 8 is spelled Z-I-N-C-A-T-E, and that's what we use to hold the charge. It's extremely stable. This is a common product. It's really made of stuff that you would put on your agricultural lands to embolden them for growth. And it's combined in a solution that basically is stabilized and incredibly, you know, it's non-toxic. If you were to have a puncture in one of our huge tanks, you would just simply wait for the solution to evaporate, dust it up, and go put it on your garden. So I think in terms of safety, we're there. In terms of time length and duration, I believe we're there. I think we're very comfortable now with the length of time that our cathode has been proven out to, which is 5,000 hours. It now becomes consumable at that point that we get to come back and visit our customers, which we'd want to do anyway. There's a great deal of opportunity to build an ecosystem of support and recurring revenue around each of these units. And when you come back to that question of market, you're asking specifically how big is this, or how big do we think we can grow? You know, our potential revenue stream, if we're simply grabbing 0.024% by 2026 is $7.5 million, which is nothing. If we're grabbing 0.12% by 2028, we're at about $500 million. If we're doing 0.25% by 2030, we're doing $1.2 billion. So, you know, this is an ever-increasing market demand because there's just nobody, I think, that has the golden bullet or silver bullet to satisfy the type of demands and needs that the customers require. And in some cases, they don't even know they require it yet. This is like going from, you know, your old tube TV where you had a pair of, you know, rabbit ears on top that you would have to move to get that extra channel. And you never realized what the potential was, you know, a mere 20, 30 years later, where you could hang that same, you know, picture on the wall same screen and go through the internet and learn all about sorts of things and have, you know, thousands of channels. You didn't know that what was available to you. And I think that's where this long-duration energy storage market is. Right now they're trying to fill of the financial losses by energy storage as they can, but it's just not an equation that works at present. And I think that our technology will be one of those that satisfies the customers. And we're betting that one of our big revenue streams in the future will be where we can actually install these units at cost with whatever financial backer we have and do a revenue share model with the supplier of the energy. And just simply be, you know, a company that takes advantage of the arbitrage. Because right now we're giving a lot of energy to the grid when it doesn't need it, which means it's just dissipating. And why wouldn't we try to create efficiency? And that's kind of what we really think is important. We don't want to see all these windmills and solar facilities keep going up everywhere, including onto the oceans these days, and yet not be able to capture every single important electron that they're producing. Why wouldn't we, you know, dedicate this? And I think the market is telling us that this is the outstanding component that all this green energy needs, as well as the grid. Because I think some of the statistics that I've read recently showcase that 65% of all green energy dollars will be going into long-duration energy storage solution equations. But again, I don't think they're there yet. One of the things that I really wanted to talk about is our early days. I mean, we've got about 300,000 hours of engineering put into this technology. That's a very big number, and it's not said lightly. It is a lot of time and energy to crack the code and bring a technology into this space. But once you get there, you know, just the state of New York alone by 2030 will be a $3.4 billion opportunity for the long-duration energy storage market. And again, we're very grateful for the patience that some of our partners that we've announced over the years have shown. And our aim is to you know, bring this to recognition by finalizing the pilot and entering into long-duration contracts with our future customers. I think there's a terrific opportunity here. I encourage everybody to do a little bit of reading, do some research. There's a fantastic website. It's energy-storage something, rather. If you type that in your Google, I'm sure it'll come up. And it's a terrific website.
Well, more importantly, can you give investors your website and your stock symbol and maybe two or three bullet points if you know, people want to just walk away from this interview? What are two or three real, just short-form points you want them to retain from this interview?
Well, first of all, our company is abound.energy. That's our website, actually, as well. We've got a .energy instead of a .com. So if you're looking for us, that's where you'll find us. The company's ticker symbol is ABND. We trade on the Canadian CSE. But we also trade on the U.S. markets. We're still underneath the old ticker moniker because it just takes a bit of time for that to click over. So the U.S. trading symbol is ZAIRF. And then lastly, we do have a European listing, but most of your viewers won't be looking at that. In terms of what I would like to leave you with, well, this isn't a complete new IP startup. In fact, we're inheriting, like I said, about 300,000 engineering hours and about, in excess of $40 million spent just even in the last 5-6 years. The original IP that was developed by a group out of Carlsbad, California, and financed by a very large mining company called Techcominco, did a great deal of the early pioneering in this tech. But the early pioneering led to certain what I would call restrictions on the use and scalability. And so thankfully the team that was assembled over the last number of years and some of these people thankfully are still with us and very committed and completely reinvented. And hence we still have a great deal of patent pending to file. And where I would leave this is that we're a mature startup. We've got a great deal of IP. We've got a great deal of enthusiasm for the space. And ultimately, you know, it's not an easy job to pick up a company that kind of was left on the side of the road, but we're very excited by where the tech is and believe that we will be able to get this company its pilot facility and then start being able to onboard customers. And our goal would be, as a target, the middle of 2025 to do that. We think we're about 12 months and $6 million ahead to do that. I know it sounds like a big number, but realistically in this space, most of our peers are private and they don't have to wrestle and fight with the stock market up and downs that you know, a young company like Abound has had to do. But we believe with common sense and practicality, we're going to be able to make the advancements that we need to not only attract the investors, but to get to a place of commercial business.
Well, thank you very much for joining us. Again, I can't stress enough how important grid stability is moving forward if we want to have this renewable energy plan in place. And just even with electricity, we're putting a lot of pressure on everything and there's more and more people everywhere. So I wish you all the success in the world. I'd love to check in and see where your progress is in the next, you know, 4 or 5 months. And, you know, maybe if when people hear your story, they'll start knocking on your door more.
Well, one of the easiest ways to begin their investigation is definitely visit our website, abound.energy. You'll see two corporate videos. One is an explainer video on the company, and one is an explainer video about the actual unit, what it would look like, what it currently looks like, and, you know, some great news release history for people to update themselves with. Anybody has questions. My name again is Jason Birmingham, and you're welcome to get a hold of me through my email, which is jason@abound.energy. Thanks again very much, Sean.
To hear more Clean Tech podcasts, visit the Clean Tech and Climate Change page on Investor Ideas. You can find it on our top template. Also, Investor Ideas has a lineup of other podcasts and themes, including the AII, the Crypto Corner, our cannabis podcast called Cannabis News and Stocks on the Move, rated one of the top investor podcasts in the sector, Play by Play, a podcast looking at sports and esports news, and Exploring Mining. To listen to any of our podcasts, visit our podcast page on Investor Ideas at investorideas.com/audio. And a reminder, you can hear our podcasts on Spotify, iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher, Spreaker.com, iHeartRadio, Google Play Music, and most audio platforms available to you. If you like any of our podcasts, we would appreciate you recommending them or reviewing them on your audio platform. And to help you follow and track clean tech and renewable energy stocks, Investor Ideas has created a directory of publicly traded stocks in the sector. You can find that by going to our homepage, looking on the sidebar and looking at renewable energy and environmental themes, and you'll find our stock directories there. Investor Ideas does remind all of investors to read our disclaimers and disclosures on our site. You can find them at investorideas.com/about-disclaimer.asp. It is important to read these. And this podcast is not an endorsement to buy products or services or securities. Investors are reminded that all investment involves risk and a possible loss of investment. Thank you again and have a great day.